This is October the 20th, and it is so amazing the way the fall is moving on. The speed of time today takes my breath away. It seems as though, I don't know whether it's because I'm getting older or the planet's moving faster, but it seems as though it used to take a seemingly long time to get from the 1st of September to the 20th of October. And now, it was just a few days ago, it seems like, that I was in Texas and celebrating my art show, which was an amazing thing. And hard to believe how much water has passed into the bridge since that time. So life is moving, at least in my experience, very, very quickly. We have Jackie on the telephone. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Glenda. It is a beautiful Sunday indeed. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to ask a question. I feel like I have no problem like being visible and sharing with many people about, I just feel like a lot of the times I'm cheerleading people, you know, through their lives. Yet when it comes time to share with people about what I do as a business, and you know, like I have this art center business, and when it gets time for me to market myself, I feel very, very contracted. And I know, you know, you also have a heart center business, and I wanted to ask, you know, from you, how do you deal with putting yourself out there and getting your message to people?
Well, actually, Jackie, there are different brain waves that we function on and hold our thinking on. And most of the time, when you're reading something like Love Without End or The Keys of Yeshua, you're offering a blessing or you're on a blessing call. You're not in beta wavelength. You're in alpha or even theta brainwave, or completely outside your physical brain into one of the consciousness frequencies that is in the electromagnetic field around you. And so you have an experience in one of those other frequencies. Then you go out into the world. Just driving down the highway puts you in beta wavelength. Beta is the in-the-world, functional, linear, got-to-get-from-here-to-there wavelength. It's also the wavelength that allows for conflict and duality and solving problems therein. And so we anticipate, when we're in beta, we have a way of anticipating objections to the things that we want to share with others. Does that sound familiar?
For sure. Yes.
Yep. So sometimes we ourselves put the objection there when it really isn't there at all. So what I do, if I'm going to, you know, I understand that all of us, even Yeshua at times, he would be, you can tell by some of the stories written about him, that he would be in beta. He would be dealing with a particular problem, but then you can also see him step on the elevator and take a ride upstairs to another higher frequency that he then taught a parable from. So what you need to do is to catch yourself and say, okay, I'm down at this functional level, which is designed and equipped to deal with duality. So is it possible that if I speak from this level, I will encourage duality or objections, or people may just think what I'm saying is inappropriate? And the fact is, a lot of times we can think back to times we've been to church or Sunday school or summer camp or a spiritual retreat. And the things that we learned there were, at that time, inspiring and touched us on our highest level of wisdom. Then we brought them out into the world and we said, what happened there? Where did it go? Did I just recant what I thought I had grasped? And it's not true. You didn't recant it. It's there. It's saved. It's just, let's compare it a little bit to a computer. If you bring a program into Microsoft Word, it'll be saved in Word. If you bring it into Microsoft Publisher, it'll be saved in Publisher. And you're not going to be able to get into the Publisher program from the Word program. If you save it in Excel, you can't get to that from the Publisher program. But has it disappeared from the computer? No. So when we're in this physical incarnation, these programs or pathways we walk on or function in are unique to our place in the world. So I would say don't offer people your highest wisdom when they're in the middle of a traffic jam. Unless, of course, somebody is going berserk and you're trying to relieve them from doing something drastic and you have to take over. But normally speaking, it's not a good place to deliver your highest wisdom. Even when you sit down with someone at the coffee table, you notice that the first thing you do is really you just exchange greetings. How are you? You let people get rid of their baggage. And then once everybody's quiet and in tune and somewhat synchronized, then you test the waters to see who's interested in a higher perception. And at that point, do you have more success?
Yeah, for sure. And I think what's happening too is that I share my wisdom and everything, it's very well received, but when it comes time for me to share, like, say, my services, then I think I'm the one maybe creating the conditions in which I think, maybe people are going to reject me or going to, so I go into the space of fear and I want to hide.
Yeah, it is you. And I can tell you for a fact, I did the same thing when I first went out with sharing the Lamb and the Lion. And then when I first spoke about his message, I would have one foot in a world of that I considered, well, safe and predictable. And then I had the other foot out on a limb, ready to move back if somebody started to saw the limb off. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I was the same way. Everyone is. What it takes is just practice and practice and practice. Faith, faith, faith. And courage to put both feet out on the limb and see that it, in fact, will bear your whole weight. I think this is one of the reasons he would share, Yeshua would share advanced understanding with the apostles and not with the ordinary people. It's not because the apostles were categorically better people. After all, he chose them from the ranks of the working class, the common of the common. But he had had time to work with them. He had had time to push them out on a limb where they could actually experience the greater strength that comes from faith. And once they had that, then he knew he could give them more. So, Jackie, it just takes practice. It takes confidence. It takes experience and confirming your faith through a better and better experience and a more valuable presence in the world.
Yeah, thank you so much. That's totally, you're totally right. I mean, it does take courage and takes, I think, also confidence that, you know, what I do have to offer is indeed amazing and does support people in their expansion and just believing that and just being okay with sharing who I am.
Absolutely. And also, I will add this to all of you who are blessing givers or your healers, and you're taking what you've learned from the blessings or Love Without End into your work. There's an old adage that a person is more likely to achieve success outside his hometown that in, or in the public arena in general than he is in his hometown or with his family and best friends. And that's actually very true, because your family and best friends already have expectations of how you're supposed to show up. And when you break their expectations, they're going to scrutinize you more carefully. It's actually, when you do something new, for example, as radically new as what I did, it would actually have been easier to do what I did, which is announce the conversations with Yeshua publicly first before I told my husband and friends about it. If I told them about it, they would say, well, why didn't you tell us before? And why didn't you share it with us if this is so wonderful? And blah, 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 blah. And the why ifs would have gone on and on and on. Or, and well, maybe you should say this. Maybe you shouldn't say that. They would start editing what I should and shouldn't say. I went directly to the public that had no opinion about me other than their ability to know the truth when they heard it. Sometimes, it's an old adage that Broadway shows are better off to open out of town. So sometimes, if you're testing something, plan a program somewhere else where no one knows you and offer it directly to people who have no prescribed, no concrete set opinions about you.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense, and it feels light exactly because of that reason. Because I know, I mean, they have no judgments on me; they don't know me, and I think you're a lot more open and receptive to what I have to say. So,
absolutely, it is so true. It is so true. I have experienced it the whole path of my work. Talked to so many people for whom it's the same way. We trip on our judgments. We trip on our expectations, and we block ourselves from newness from those we've come to love and trust being in a particular way, and we don't want them to change. So this is true not only of those who are applying the content of the blessings or the books in teaching or healing venues, but for anyone receiving blessings, and you notice something that is changing for the better in your own life, it may be that you don't want to discuss it right away. Someone that you, who knows you and knows your medical regimen or your therapeutic regimen or the depression you've been in or whatever you're healing from or whatever relationship you're wanting to get out of or get into, will have their own opinions about worldly ways you could or should do that. And they don't want a new challenge to come in to their opinion about how things should work for you. And I would say, keep the blessings of God secret. Yeshua actually told the apostles to do this. He said, pray in secret. Allow the blessings of God to come to you in secret. And then the world will regale the beauty of his blessings when they come to fruition. So there is a time and place where honoring the inner world of your being is the most appropriate way to be and to reside and hold the blessings of your life. This is one of the reasons at the close of the energetic blessing, I have you go lie down quietly and just receive for 7 minutes. Then I would suggest many times, now you can use your own sense of determination about this, but many times I would say just get up and keep the blessing secret until you really sense what is being given to you or what's going on within you. Now, other times it can be good to share because other people may feel something that you felt. And through sharing, you confirm a reality. So I leave that to your best intuition. But there are times when keeping something to ourselves for a little while is a good thing. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak? I'm really glad to have heard from you, Jackie. And I would love to hear from anyone else who would like to come on the call. It's always good to have people come in early because that way I really get to savor our conversation. And yes, we do have three more people on the call. Yay! Someone from area code, well, it looks like 820. And you're on.
I'm 802. Would that do?
Yes, 802, yes.
Okay. Glenda, this is Cecilia.
Hi.
Hello. I have a question about something you brought up very briefly several Sundays ago. And I don't have my notes in front of me, so I may not, you know, express what you said accurately, but it seemed like you were saying that a number of the saints had physical conditions, ailments, and you thought that because they didn't accept their vulnerability in those ways, there was a link between their not accepting their vulnerability and their later being martyred. And you said something about how important it is to accept our vulnerability and that our mortality is our eternity, in a sense. And I found that very intriguing. Do you remember?
Well, I remember the conversation, but I remember it more in two parts rather than being linked together. So let me repeat it the way I remember, and then if I've left something out, you can correct me or add to what I say. I did mention that many, many of the saints had physical or even at times emotional afflictions. Mm-hmm. And they did not allow their afflictions to become a handicap that they agreed to. They endured the affliction and acknowledged that it was there. They used it as an instrument of humility on the physical plane so that they could rise to a higher state of being on the soul's level, on the spiritual level, and accomplish their service to God. And I'm sure, without doubt, they gave greater hope to people around them because, remember, in the first few centuries of Christianity and during the Middle Ages, life was very, very hard for most people. And there were very few people that did not have some kind of affliction in life. So to see their servants of God also share affliction helped to relieve in the minds of common people that afflictions are punishments. And they bore that affliction as if it were a gift from God and used it to give hope to everyone that afflictions are not coming to us because we're sinners or we've done bad things or we've separated from God. Sometimes afflictions come to us so that we will find the higher part of ourself that can truly be an emissary of life. Last century, we saw that perfectly demonstrated in the life of Helen Keller, who had massive afflictions. As a child, she was very, very hostile to her afflictions, belligerent, spoiled, defiant, resistive of assistance in any way. And her coach and lifelong caregiver finally figured out how to introduce a kind of physical language into Helen's world, where Helen could then communicate with someone, and it completely transformed her life. Well, this is what the saints did. They found their affliction to provide them with levels of communication through the soul. And that those levels of communication through the soul took them closer to God. Now, in some cases, that Mother Teresa, she had many afflictions in her life, including heart problems, heart attacks, and several other health problems. She lived very not in denial of any affliction, but in great humility of them. Many of the saints had afflictions that did not result in further persecution. As a matter of fact, by cultivating the humility within her afflictions, she averted further affliction because she engendered compassion for many people who then supported her work more wholeheartedly. Now, some of the other saints so completely rose above their afflictions that on a spiritual level, they became a threat to powers in the church. They had accomplished something that the bishops, the cardinals, or even the pope had not accomplished, for lack of affliction, for lack of this mastery of humility. And because their spiritual strength was a threat, sometimes that did lead to martyrdom. But it did not defeat the soul, because the soul at that point was so strong, it simply carried forward in its momentum into eternity, the same as it was with Yeshua, dying on the cross and then being resurrected 3 days later. So, as far as I can remember, that was the essence of my teaching.
Oh, thank you for expanding on that. I appreciate it. I learned a lot
today. Oh, good.
Okay.
Good. I thought maybe, you know, sometimes when we take a big subject and we smush it into 2 minutes, we can leave out some of the good parts that need to be added later on. So anybody who has a question about something I've said earlier, hey, you're welcome to come back and say, Glenda, I don't think 2 minutes was good enough for what you said.
Yeah. Okay.
So, thank Cecilia.
You. Thank you.
Welcome to the blessing. I'm going to take two other calls, and that should take us pretty close to the rest of our time. We have a caller from area 603, and you're on. Hello? Area 603? I've unmuted you here, but you may have to unmute your own telephone. Okay, while we're waiting for you, I'll go ahead and take the next caller, and then 603 can come in when we're done. Oh, once you've figured out how to get in. All right, we've got a caller from area code 413. Is it Francis?
No, it's Heidi. Thank you so much.
Oh, Heidi, hi.
Hi. If anybody else comes on the line, I'd want you to switch because I've been blessed to ask a question before, but in the beginning of the call, and you can answer this a different time if you prefer, is you talked exactly about what I had question of, and you answered it by saying that there's different wavelengths of thinking or consciousness, maybe, is
mm-hmm.
putting it. And I find one of the things that I'm trying to follow that you gave me the guidance of is not identifying with the past and letting go. And
mm-hmm.
One of the post-traumatic stress syndrome symptoms is dissociation, and that can come back. And maybe I just have to deal with it the way that you talked about that the saints deal with it. Maybe it's just a matter of practice that some things just keep coming back no matter how many times I open my heart to God and open the healing. And maybe there's a wisdom to that, but maybe there's anything that I'm doing that is a little bit of a, where I feel like I'm failing higher power in the sense that I can't seem to stay in that spiritual state. And maybe practice is just the answer, but if you have any words of wisdom, so far it hasn't erased the reality of, you know, when with a trauma, when something is so big your psyche can't handle it, it fragments it out to other parts and they carry the, you know, body memories and flashbacks and all that fun stuff. But I'm sure.
Oh, sure. I totally relate to that, Heidi. And many, many people are in some version of that kind of predicament. And so I would offer this encouragement to anyone who has an overwhelming affliction, even if it's not painful or oppressive, if it's just interruptive of your life, it's still a very big deal. And I have three basic words of wisdom. One is, do not view it as any form of punishment. Number two, do not view it as anything you're failing for God. And number three, do not take it as the consequence of evolution in your life, whether your life or people that came before you, that must be continued. And I want to speak a little bit more in depth on that one. We humans are very complex creatures. On the one hand, we have physical vessels that have come about through generations of DNA encoding and possibly very distant evolutionary roots. So we are not completely disconnected from the evolutionary world. But evolution is not what makes us unique as children of God, as spiritual beings, and as souls. We, the love that you are, and we, the spiritual collective that we are, actually find our deepest wisdom in creating life from this moment, right here and now. We are not fully ourselves because we are like our parents, our grandparents, and we have no obligation whatsoever to do a family tree or study the past victories or sins of our parents for fear that we've overlooked an advantage or carried forward a sin. It simply is an obsession that some people have about somehow finding their power in the past. Your power is not in the past. Yes, you do have a past. Sometimes with regard to inherited genetic type illnesses, it's important to know what the odds were that your family had it. Once you know, drop it. Let go of it. Don't hang on to it. Sometimes when we're looking at patterns we've developed in life, we may find that they are unique to certain regions in the world or subregions in the United States, and we find, oh, my goodness, I'm just saying y'all, like I used to say y'all as a Texan, as a generality, and really, it wasn't being regarded sincerely by most people. It was being regarded as a Texasism instead of a sincere extension of inclusion to the people in my audience. And I found better ways of doing it. So there are times when we need to reach back in our past. We need to look at the patterns we've brought forward. Maybe some old attitudes we picked up in grammar school or high school, or maybe with our first best friend or our first spouse, if we've had more than one, our first job, some of the fears, anxieties, or decisions we made around those things. Sometimes we have to go back and clean the closets. But once the closets are clean, don't live back there. Now is where your power is, right here. And it doesn't have to be a metaphysical, transcendent experience of now. Just a reasonably recent survey of currently relevant experience, friends, information, and activities. Where you are now is where you live. And I'm not just saying that because I want you to deny what came before or escape what came before. I want you to realize there's nothing to escape. The past doesn't exist unless you bring it into this reasonably close region of now. Because for the soul, there is no time and space. There really isn't. And the closer we are to our soul, the more effectively we will transcend whatever affliction we have in life. Some people have reading disabilities. Some people are dyslexic. And I know what being truly pathologically dyslexic is, because I was for about 5 years of my life due to something they really believed was polio, but they could never confirm it. And I was under medical care for that. And then through proper therapy and the right kind of healing and coaching assistance, I completely got through it. But it's quite an affliction when it's real, not just an excuse for why you ran a red light. Too many people use that as an excuse for missing a word or getting words reversed. And the fact is, our brain can just play tricks on us sometimes, and anyone can reverse words or drop out a letter. But reading disabilities are very real, and bipolar conditions are very real. Some people are afflicted with that. Some people are afflicted with just repeating cycles of poverty. And the best advice I can give them is to stop identifying it as poverty and identifying it as simplicity. Just the utter simplicity of having no physical burdens to manage financially so that the heart can get busy creating wealth. Once the heart creates wealth, and enjoy that simplicity for what it can bring you in peace of mind, so that you can heal physically. As you become stronger, your heart becomes stronger, you will find opportunities then to create more physical abundance that you could never, ever create as long as you were resisting poverty. Just stop resisting it, rename it, bring it into present time as something you can view in a more positive way. And that makes all the difference in our life. How we name things in present time makes a huge difference. And you, Heidi, might want to think about giving your, what you call an affliction, a different name. You might call it my challenge for higher living. Rename it. Don't allow, you know, there's been a lot of research done about from people in alternative medicine and even inside traditional medicine, where they avoid naming traditional diseases as diabetics, heart disease, cancer. Many of them are now doing is they're describing to the patient what is happening in their body, what situations they're dealing with, and how they might be able to correctively address those conditions without naming it a particular thing. And you know why? That's because we have now, after a whole two or three generations of dealing with some of these major diseases, we have drawn conclusions about the finality of some of these diseases and what they necessarily, at least according to our belief, will result in, or what patterns they will bring us. And a lot of healers are finding that if we simply didn't apply our old conceptions of old patterns, we could then dissect the ingredients of the symptom and handle each symptom one by one.
So body memory is an opportunity to get closer to God?
Exactly, and closer to yourself as a commanding entity on a soul level, where you can look at some of these symptoms and not put them into a debilitating package or a pathological description. You can look at particular symptoms and say, okay, this is happening. I'm going to call this my challenge of the moment to get into a higher focus. Rename it. Reassign it a new and different importance in your life.
Okay.
You can even assign it your own imaginary name.
So, flashback opportunity to heal the past, maybe.
Exactly. That's a good example.
Right. Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome. Well, it looks like we are at the point where we need to get on with our blessing. And it's a privilege. I so look forward to this all week long, because it allows me to be in harmony with Yeshua, here with Him conveying the Holy Spirit from one to another as we all come into this greater place of union and devotion for a higher good, surrendering whatever afflictions we have to greater answers for a higher and better life. I would ask that you be seated, your feet bare on the floor or ground, and your head uncovered, somewhat erect as you sit in your chair. You don't have to be in a lotus position or in any other way that's uncomfortable for you. Just be able to receive the energies flowing downward and the energies flowing back up from the earth. See them mingle and swirl in your heart as they accumulate power in the center of your being. Start your prayer, and your prayer may be anything that your heart desires. Let it come from the love that you are and from the perfection that your life can be. I find that a prayer is far more powerful when we focus upon the end result of the prayer rather than the trouble or affliction or challenge that we're worried about. God will take care of the how. We don't know how something can be done, but the important thing is that we get started. And now, in your prayer, let's get started. I will say my invocation to Yeshua. We will conduct the energy for 3 minutes. I'll let you know when that's done, then go and rest for at least 7. Don't think, just rest and assimilate. Dear Yeshua, Lord of life and brother of man, the one who has shown us all that we can be, thank you for being with us today and leading us into the higher space of our being, where we can see our lives made perfect and whole. Carry our thoughts into these better places, that by faith we can see our whole life made perfect in this moment, and the seeds planted in this moment for them to grow into outer manifestations of wholeness and perfection in the world. Amen. Your energetic blessing is now complete. It's been given. Know how richly you've been blessed and how deeply you're loved. Go and rest. Assimilate all the gifts into your body, heart, soul, and being. And I look forward to being with you again next Sunday. Bye-bye from me.